DW Africa Link.
I wish I never had to stress about money. You probably feel the same, right? I mean, imagine having more than enough money to do whatever you want. You know, before recording this, I checked my bank account, and let's just say I'm not on Africa's rich list. Far from that. In a recent report by Oxfam, just 4 African billionaires hold more wealth than 750 million people. That's half the continent. And the wealthiest 1%, well, they own over 42% of Africa's total wealth. So what does that mean for everyday people like me? And how does a growing wealth gap impact democracy? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Now, back in 2000, Africa had 0 billionaires. Fast forward to 2025, there are 23. I'm sure you're curious about the top 4. So here they are. Aliko Dangote from Nigeria leads the pack, dealing in cement and oil. Johan Rupert from South Africa deals in luxury goods. Also from South Africa is Nicky Oppenheimer, who loves his diamonds. And Nassef Sariris from Egypt is into construction. Now together, they are worth over $57 billion, more than half the continent's population combined. Yet, 23 of the world's most unequal countries are in Africa. So what's really going on? For more on this, let me bring in Kwesi Obing, who is the Accountable and Inclusive Governance Lead for Oxfam in Africa. Also joining me is Olisa Chukwuma, DW correspondent in Lagos, Nigeria. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to Africa Link. Kwesi, your outfit Oxfam did the research. What surprised you most about the findings?
Well, thanks very much for this discussion. To start with, this report is not about poverty porn. Far from it. What this report is seeking to establish and also to point out is that African governments have demonstrated a lack of commitment to tackling inequality. No one is blaming billionaires. Essentially, two things. One is that, and I'll speak from another independent research, just to, again, broaden the context. Another independent research by Afrobarometer, they published a new report just this year. In which they asked African citizens, you know, what they make of their government's approach to tackling inequality. Close to 80% felt that their governments were not doing enough to tackle inequality. Actually, less than 20% said their governments were doing well in tackling inequality. If you look at the numbers again, Africa is second only to Latin America in terms of regions where you have the highest levels of inequality. And thirdly, of our commitment to reducing inequality index, of the 30 bottom countries, 25 of them, in terms of the numbers of when you take the 30 countries that fall at the bottom of the inequality index, 25 of them are African. What that tells you is that our governments have basically shifted the cost of social protection and basic services onto the poorest amongst their citizens, and basically have left the richest amongst them, who are more able to contribute more, scot-free. Essentially, the point I'm trying to make is that we're not against, in fact, we want Africa to grow more wealthy people. What we don't want is a situation where the poorest amongst us are having to carry everybody, including the richest amongst us, along, you know, as free riders. That can't happen, and it has implications for social cohesion. Right. It has implications for our democratic experimentation, and it has impact on real lives. It's not just simply numbers. These are numbers that have faces to them in many countries on the continent, frankly. Once the breadwinner is down with a bout of malaria, that family is unlikely to have a meal that day.
So let's talk about the real life consequences on the ground then? You're saying that these billionaires are obviously contributing to large inequalities in different African countries. How is it manifesting itself on the ground?
There is a place and a role for the state. There's across the region, there is state, you know, citizen compact, which is the national constitution. The state is responsible for its citizens. And the state, therefore, has a responsibility to put in place, for example, progressive tax systems that would allow and systems to seal loopholes, both national and also contribute to sealing international loopholes in terms of the tax architecture that would allow them to mobilize as much domestic resources as possible progressively to address issues of inequality. So that's one. Secondly, many of our tax reforms, as I indicated a while ago, are skewed in favor of the rich. What that simply means is that for the average worker, and in many African countries, close to 90% are operating in the informal sector. And I cite the case of this woman, Abe Christine, who sells flour in Uganda. Well, according to the numbers, she pays close to 44% of her profits as tax. While some of the richest companies in Uganda pay less than 10% of their profits as tax. Now, what it simply means is that this woman who has zero safety net and no social protection is paying close to half of her profit in tax. Now, you can't build a viable society where the poorest among your people are giving a free ride to the richest. Ordinarily, a progressive tax system would ensure that the more capable contribute a decent share of their income into the provision of basic services like education, healthcare, and social protection. And I think COVID exposed the lack of, you know, basic healthcare for many of our citizens, and also the fact that there's very little social protection measures to cushion the bottom 50% of our population.
Got it. Thank you very much for really trying to put things into perspective for us, Kwesi. And I'm sure Lisa Chukwuma, our correspondent in Nigeria, you've been listening in. Nigeria has Africa's richest man. I don't even know if I have to mention his name, because everyone knows when you say Nigeria and Africa's richest man, Aliko Dangote. He's worth what? More than $20 billion. So talking about inequality, Olisa, you've been digging into this, researching into this. How does it look like on the ground when you look at someone like Dangote making that much money and you look at many ordinary Nigerians?
Well, it's quite visible, this inequality and this wealth gap, especially in a place like Nigeria, in a country like Nigeria, which is like West Africa's, you know, commercial powerhouse. It's visible in the streets where, you know, people can afford basic amenities like healthcare, transportation, and even in cities like Lagos. It means that even if you're going on a public transport, whether in your private car, if you manage to have one, or you're taking the public bus, you would basically, my guy shoved off the road if care is not taken by you know, armed escorts of big SUV vehicle, you know, in convoys moving people who might not even be in government or might be, you know, government officials. Ostensibly, you see that wealth gap, you know, visible in your face. Sometimes it can be ostentatious. You know, that's when they go to parties and places, the luxury, the clothes, the jewelry, the spending, the high end taste for luxury goods amongst the wealthy. You know, so
many people can't even afford a daily meal.
Yes, especially in a city like Lagos, where you have like this, this island and mainland gap, even within the same communities. There are people, and there's no middle class. They've talked about the recent new regime removal of subsidy, which scrapes about the middle class. So there is basically, it's either you're poor or you are in the 1% of the 1%. So everybody wants to be amongst the 1% of the 1%.
What's for me interesting, Olisa, before I get back to Kwesi Obim, because there's some very interesting questions I want to get answers to, Kwesi. So please stand by. I'm going to come to you in a bit. But Olisa, you know, across the continent, and Nigeria, I dare say, especially, there's some sort of respect that is given to very rich people because, you know, they can splash the cash, they can, you know, tip you and all of that. Is that the sense you get still in the country, or are we having more and more young people somehow dislike the ultra wealthy and expect them to pay their fair share of taxes, for instance?
Dislike? Of course, no way. If there's anything about Nigerian society, especially when it comes to the wealth, the haves and the have-nots, the have-nots want to be amongst the haves. They too, it's almost like, even for the young people, there is this aspiration for wealth. You know, they clamor for wealth. So some people might describe it as a crass materialism, because it's almost, just like Kwesi talked about, there's very little safety net in terms of public services, well-funded, education well-funded. So the only way is to make it. When you make it, then you can talk about, okay, any other thing. But if you don't make it, then it's almost like if you've not even arrived in the first place. So people don't really roll their eyes at wealthy people. They want to get close to them. They want to get money from them. They want to get contracts from them. They want to get favors from them, whether wealthy businessmen or, as you know, the popular mantra of, you know, wealthy politicians, elected politicians in public offices who basically have all the cash to splash. So young people, there's this aspiration that you have to make it. And if this is the example that they are setting, then that example is all young people are going to follow. So they don't necessarily hate the rich. They want to be the rich themselves. That's it.
Right. It seems young people are just idolizing these wealthy people. Olisa himself wants to be rich. And I'm not sure how long that's going to take Olisa to get to that level of wealth. But the dream is to be rich. Many young people want to be rich. And they look at these wealthy people as role models. And talking about these wealthy African billionaires, Kwesi, looks like they are increasing, right? I mean, how did Africa go from 0 billionaires to what, 23 in just a quarter century? That's like in 25 years, we move from 0 to 23 billionaires. How did that happen, Kwesi?
We want Africans to grow rich. We want the continent and the population to create wealth. African countries collect. For every dollar that African countries, for example, collect from personal income tax and wealth taxes, nearly 3% is mobilized on average from inequality exacerbating taxes like VAT. What it simply means is that the poor, again, because, you know, VAT is a consumption tax and it's punitive to the poor as opposed to the rich. And taxes on wealth in Africa have fallen by nearly a quarter since 2012. While payroll taxes, and who are the ones who pay taxes on their income? The average worker, and VAT have increased. What it simply tells you is that somehow we've reduced our taxes, collect tax, you know, tax revenues, mobilized from the rich, and shifted the burden to the bottom 50%. So it's not really that we think that that we should blame the rich. The rich are taking advantage of the gaps, and it's a responsibility of the state to close those gaps and reform the tax system that would allow them to actually mobilize resources and invest them in public spending that would boost our economic growth. In fact, you said Olise wants to be rich. It's absolutely okay for him to desire and to have that aspiration. So African governments, on the average, have cut back the share of budgets going into public spending. That basically means budget going into issues like healthcare, education, and social protection. During COVID, we saw a remarkable improvement and investment in public services. Since COVID, up to 70 in countries, when we look at the numbers, 79% of our countries are basically backtracked on progressive taxation. What it simply means is that they are taking more from the poor as opposed to the rich. And up to 89 have actually also regressed or moved back on labor rights, including minimum wages. It's incredible that, you know, the wages that workers are paid. And who are the ones who create wealth in the first place? It's workers. It's the average person, right?
I think you make a very valid point. I mean, bottom line is you believe that the government has a key role here to if you're making more money, then you pay a bit more so that those that are not well-to-do are not losing so much of the little money that they are making. And then those that are making a lot more money will contribute a bit more, their fair share. But you also talk about how this impacts democracy negatively. What did you mean by that, Kwesi?
Well, thanks very much, Eddie. Well, essentially, what I mean is that from empirical data, from not just simply Oxfam, but then also from institutions like the IMF and the World Bank and the OECD and the World Economic Forum, when inequality rises or widens beyond a certain stage, a certain level, it has impact on democracy, on the economy, and on people. And I give you a couple of examples. One, empirically, a certain level of inequality depresses, actually impacts negatively on economic growth. That's one of the reasons, that's one of them that impacts negatively on economic growth. And on also, unequal societies are known to be more violent, less secure, and people are less happy. And also, what it means is that when you have an extreme concentration of wealth in a tiny or few hands, what it simply means is that there is a capture of the policy-making space in these countries. And so you can see it across the country. A tiny few basically control the policy-making machine in these countries. So it's important for us to demystify this whole issue around the wealth that a tiny minority control in these countries. It has implications on the governance system. And as I indicated earlier, close to 80% of African citizens think that their governments are not doing enough. Right. What it means is that at some point, these citizens are going to take the law into their own hands, and the implications on our attempt at institutionalizing constitutional democracy.
Right, right. Really, really good info you're sharing with us, Kwesi. Thanks for that. Olisa, let us know if the government, Nigeria's government, is trying in any way to try to let billionaires in the country pay their fair share, or is it business as usual? Nothing is changing?
Well, it has been business as usual for a very long time. But when this current administration, we just correctly had this new tax law reforms that was brought in by the Tinubu administration just a couple of weeks ago. And it's been praised by many experts in the finance and tax sector that this is might be a good thing going forward in terms of growing Nigeria's tax nets and targeting the higher income earners and especially those to contribute their own fair share, and even really harmonizing Nigeria's tax culture, which for a lot of years has been really, really dormant, many experts would say. But apart from that, it's pretty much, as you were, in terms of the rich and the powerful, pretty much doing what they like and what they can and what they can get away with. We know that apart from the top businessmen who, you can trace where their wealth comes from. The ostentatious wealth you see in society and high society, many come from, public officials. The kind of vehicles they ride, the kind of tires they have, the kind of luxury brands they wear, the kind of security escorts and attaches that they have. It's almost like if the rest of the country is banned to the Philistines, you have this a country with high insecurity, not just in the north, but also in places like the southeast. And you find that when these politicians or their cronies travel to places or people who have money, you just see armed vehicles, and you know they are not policing, right? Basically protecting an SUV. What about the little people on the streets? Who is going to protect them? You know, they are left to their own travel. So apart from the tax announcements, very little has been done, because the order is, you know, get rich how you can and be in that 1% of the 1%, as they say here.
Right, right. Thanks, Elisa. Final words to you, Kwesi Obeng. In your report, you mentioned that some countries have, quote, fairer economies, so inequality is not that wide a gap. You talked about countries like Morocco, South Africa, Seychelles. What have they done right to avoid such wild inequality?
There are some countries that are definitely making some progress. But just to underline this quickly by pointing out that African tax systems are nearly three times less effective at redistributing income away from the richest 1% than the global average. So again, what we're talking about is that, and again, just simply taxing the richest 1%, an additional, I'm talking of taxing just the 1%, richest 1%, an additional just 10% or on their kind of income, and 1% on their wealth, it's enough to raise close to $66 billion annually. And this is enough to provide free quality education for all African kids, as well as electricity for the population, and indeed even an additional $2 billion to invest in other areas of society.
Right.
You're right. There are a couple of countries that are doing a few things right. So if you take a country like Morocco, Morocco raises close to 1.5% of its GDP from taxation of property, which is wealth, right? In South Africa, taxation of property is about 1.2% of the country's GDP. Now, from our numbers, if every African country kind of matched up Morocco's efforts, and as I indicated earlier, it is not safe for even the richest. Of course, it's not healthy for the poor, because it undermines our country's economy's ability to grow and expand and create more jobs for young people. It undermines our democratic institutions. It also undermines public confidence and personal security and safety in all of our countries. And so
right.
I think it is important that we take the issue of fixing inequality or tackling inequality seriously, because we need to bridge this gap and not overload the poorest percentage of our population with the cost of all the public services that we all, both rich and poor, enjoy in our societies.
Right. Thank you very much, both of you. Kwesi Obeng, he is the Accountable and Inclusive Governance Lead for Oxfam in Africa. Thank you very much. Also, Olisa Chukwuma, he is DW correspondent in Lagos, Nigeria.
For most Africans, inequality isn't just a statistic. It's a daily reality. It's the mother who can't afford to send her children to school, the young graduate struggling to find a job, the farmer unable to afford basic healthcare, and the entrepreneur facing high taxes while the wealthy remain largely untaxed. The system feels rigged, favoring elites and big corporations. Women bear the brunt as they face the world's widest gender wealth gap. Oxfam says unfair tax policies exacerbate the issue, such as VAT, value-added tax, which disproportionately affects the poor, while the wealthy are largely untaxed. Democracy also suffers. When money speaks loudest, ordinary voices get drowned out. Experts say bold reforms are the only way forward to a fairer future. A suggested 1% wealth tax and a 10% increase in income tax will generate $66 billion annually to help close these gaps. So, what do you think? Share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We want to hear your stories, your experiences, and your ideas for change. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe, and I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening. Now, let me go check my bank account again.
DW. Made for Minds.